Welcome to 90 Minutes with Neville Southall. I'm Melanie Harvey. Tonight we are joined by Billy Kenny, who was an Everton teenage prodigy. He burst onto the scene at the club and made his name with a man of the match performance in the Merseyside derby in 1992. But unfortunately, a period of injury led to a downward spiral into addiction. And 15 months later, since that, after that performance, he stopped playing football. He was sacked by Everton and a short spell at Oldham Athletic. Didn't really work out. Tonight, Billy's joined us to tell us his story, and we're really grateful to have you. Welcome, Billy.
Hello.
As ever, we are joined by the big man himself, Neville. We also have secret drug addicts with us, and we have Dave Feely with us. So welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us, Billy. It's great for you to be here. I think I'd like to start just really by taking you back to being a young lad in North Liverpool and dreaming of playing for Everton. Do you want to tell us a bit about your dreams to be a footballer when you were a kid?
Ah, the dreams, please. It was every night, you know what? I was always, because my dad was a footy player as well, so I was always interested in footy. From when I was like, from the first, the minute I was born, I think I was kicking the ball with my dad around the street and all that. And he'd, I thought on of it, to be honest, when I was very, really young, I just thought, you know, everyone in the street was playing footy. It was no different from everyone else. But then as I got a bit older, to about 8 or something, and I remember being in town with my ma and some fellas shouting us and asking me, did my dad used to play for Everton, though, like taking the mickey out of us? Yeah. And I didn't understand. And like, he's going to me, hey, mate, did your dad used to play for Everton? A few fellas said it to me mum and that. And I was always questioning me ma, what are you on about? And I said, did my dad play for Everton? So she went, yeah. That's all I ever wanted to do from that minute on. I just wanted to play for Everton like my dad. It was that's what it was. And so where we were from as well, on Scotland Road and Vauxhall Road, it was footy mad. Every corner, every bin shed, everything was a goalpost. The older ones were playing, the younger ones were playing. It was just footy mad.
What made you different from the rest of those kids then?
It was the desire because my dad played, that's what I mean. I just had this burning desire. And like, I always felt like, thinking back now, I felt as though it was my destiny to play for Everton, the way it turns out, because, the dreams I was having, that's all they was, you know, they were mad dreams, like they were so real and that, you know what I mean? I just thought to myself, and the murder I was having in Burlington Street with like the Reds and the other families, because it was proper. Nev, is Nev still in?
Yeah.
You come to ask, I've never ever told you this, lad, but you come to do a penalty thing, you know, they were taking penalties at you. Me dad's on Vauxhall Road and our ladies, can you remember?
I can remember going to school, yeah.
A penalty shootout. Yeah. Well, I ended up smacking me little mate, one little Lee Maloney, you might know him, Dave. Because he got Nev's autograph and then ripped it up in Nev's face, so I fucking battered him.
Yeah.
I said, what are you fucking doing? You know what I mean? We were on the roof, lads, and me dad and that at the end of the tournament, they were taking penalties at you. I never ever said it when we were in the changes or not, and you know what I mean? I might have felt a bit but I was fucking Everton mad, lad. As soon as I found out my dad played for Everton, then that was it. And I was always chubby and like, obviously, back then in the 80s as well, everyone was eating loaves of bread and all that, wasn't it? It was just bread. Everything was bread. Bread, and it must have been because we were all skint and they were filling the kids up with chip butties. You get tea and toast, wouldn't you? And then you get chip butties for your tea. Everything was bread. So I was always like chubby me and small and like I couldn't last the game. So my desire to play for Everton, I got into the boxing gym then and all the weight come off and I got fitter and then my football went better and I didn't even realise I was good, to be honest with you. And even like through camping school and all that, I always carried a bit of weight and like I was really, honest to God, it was only for like the desire that like it got me there. The desire like from that took me apart from me mates, if you like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So because, how old were you when you signed? How old were you when you were starting to train?
I started properly training like when I was about 14. I got into Liverpool Schoolboys when I left Burlington Street and Voxey, and I went to Campion High School. Dave Watson went the same school. Yeah. Steve McManaman went the same school. This Dave Smith, he went to Norwich, went the same school. So it was a good like footballing school, Campion. So then, like, every time I come off the pitch and that, like, everyone would be like, oh, you're brilliant there, and the school team were doing well. But we had loads of good players. John Doolan, Nev knows Johnny, went to Evan. We had loads of good players. It just wasn't me. And some of them at that time, because I was carrying a bit of weight, some of them were better than me at that time. But as I said, I ended up going I got in the Liverpool boys team and that. And my dad said to me, look, you're in the Liverpool, you need to get fit now. Because he was obviously on it being a pro himself, you know what I mean? That, like, you know, I was still eating all kinds and I was so starving as well. No one was a kid. Everyone was starving down Scotty and Bailey, wasn't he, lads?
Yeah.
I was starving when I was a kid, honest. Yeah. So I was hungry and eating all the time. And so anyway, my dad sent me down to my uncle, Peter Kenny. He runs the boxing and Leo's, no, Leo's lad, Lee Jones's. So we went there when I was 14, and then with the boxers and all that, they show you discipline and like and your eating habits and get to bed early and train hard. So I was doing that, and I didn't have, because I was always messed about as well. I have a laugh, lad, and a fuck about and all that. Well, that stopped all that because I was tired. I'd train, I'd go home. And the next minute, the weights come off and 15, 16, 17. And then, you know, obviously, as you know, I had the chance to go to a couple of teams, Everton, Liverpool, Man United. And I had to make me mind up in the end. So and it was Everton for me, although I loved it at Liverpool. They were looking after me, Liverpool. I was at Liverpool before I was at Everton. So once the weight come off and I got fit and all that, like, I started believing in myself then, because people, as I said, when I was chubby and that, people were saying when I'm coming off the pitch, oh, you're bossing this, that, and the other, but I didn't really believe it because I didn't feel fit. I didn't feel like a footy player. I was always like, you know what I mean, lads, starving. so anyway,
do you think it was that sort of desire and that hard work, and then you got extra fit, and then obviously you had the talent. You just needed a bit of to put the effort in, really. Yeah. So you broke through. You were obviously playing in the, what were they in those days? Was it still the A team, B team, that sort of thing, or was it
the B team? You started with the B team.
How did you get your chance in the first team then? How did that come about? What happened? Talk us through that.
Well, I worked hard. I mean, you've got to work hard first and foremost. I mean, Neville tell you before the drink and everything else, I was probably one of the most dedicated young kids around, you know, like, as I said, with the desire and because my dad played, I was on a mission, mate, so I was doing everything right. I was, to be honest, nothing was going to stop me from playing for Everton in the end, because I was doing everything right. As I said, I was super fit, I was training with the boxers, I was to bed early, I was doing everything right, and all the hard work, it comes to fruition, because I was always good with the ball, you know what I mean? It was just me fitness side of things and me messing about and me staying out late of a night. And I knocked all that in the head and started listening to people. I should have carried on listening to people, but...
That was what I was going to say. So take us to that night then, that derby match. I remember I was living in Glasgow at the time and we went to the pub to watch the match, and it was quite the performance. Obviously, from you and the team around you, it was a fairly decent side, wasn't it?
It was a great.
Tell us
about
that night. Was, you know, do you still look back on that as like
it was
the
a great
pinnacle
night.
Of everything?
It was a great night. I watch it now and again. I watched it the first time a couple of years, well, about last year for the first time, and I don't know how many years, but. That derby day. I can remember going in, we were in early, it was a Monday night, and everyone, it was all, yeah. Yeah, we were in early. We done our we done a little bit in the morning, and then we went and stayed in the hotel up the 62 there. That hotel on the motorway by Whiston. It's called the Lodge.
Village.
The Logwood Mill. So we're in there anyway, and I was a bit nervous because my first couple of games at Goodison. I've never pulled him on this. A mate up was doing this. Said to me, "Bear tonight." But what he's done to me. So I'm playing right midfield, my first couple of games. I'm out on the right, and he's throwing the ball at me, right, at 100 miles an hour. So it had landed 4 feet in front, and it had come off the turf at 200 miles an hour.
Like a bullet.
Oh, listen, he's done that for the full half against, I think my debut was against Coventry. Well, I flew in, I'm saying to Ken, tell him.
Yeah.
Throwing the ball, ain't no testing me.
Yes.
Good job, he had a good touch, one of that, but he doesn't ruin his career there. My nerves were fucked with him, honest lad, but we've had our pre-match meal in the morning time in Lodgewood Mill, and we always used to go for a walk. Then we'd have a bit of scrambled egg, and then you go for a walk, and then back to your room. I used to room with Dave Watson, me Waggy, to have a scream with him. But anyway, so on the walk after the breakfast in the morning, Colin and Kendall have shouted me over. He said, "You're playing tonight, lad." I said, "Oh, am I?" I said, "I'm made up, because that was my dream right there and then." And all these Maloneys, these Liverpool from Burlington Street, who we used to fight with all my life, lad. Well, I was only just turned 19 then, so it wasn't like, it was only 4 years ago. I was fighting in Burnley with them over Liverpool and Everton, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was still, I hated them, you know, lad. He killed me them Reds years ago. They were winning everything. I used to cry my eyes out in fucking bed, lad. So anyway, he said, "You're playing." Oh, mate, I said, "Sam," but I was full of confidence anyway. Neville tell you. I was always full of confidence on the pitch. I'm more confident on the pitch in front of thousands than doing this right now, you know what I mean? Honest to God. So it was where I felt comfortable. So I was made up, goes back to the room, right on the phone to me dad. I said, "I'm playing." He says, "Oh, you're not, are you?" I said, "I'm playing, lad." I said, he went, "Well, look, it's brilliant." He was more nervous than me, the family, you know what I mean, lad?
Yeah.
He said, "Just play your game, Bill." He said, you're doing great. And Howard and Colin said the same thing. And I just couldn't wait to run them off, lad, and get at them, you know what I mean? And I just couldn't wait because I'd always played against Liverpool, A team, B team. Yeah. As I said earlier, I was at Liverpool before I was with Everton, so I knew all their players anyway. I'd never been beat off them, lads, in the A team, the B team, the reserves. I used to get right into them, and I used to make sure all my mates were getting into them as well. You know what I mean? Because if you let them play, lad, they'll play all over you. So my motto was, and the Burnley thing was coming into that game, and I was. And in the tunnel going on the pitch, I'm screaming my head off me. McManaman, Redknapp, they were all my mates. I wouldn't talk to them. I said, "I'll see you after the fucking get off me," you know what I mean? And all that, you know what I mean? Just putting it on them and that.
Yeah.
Come on, I'm screaming in the tunnel. Got on there, mate. And I was just so focused, lads. And I never seen Thingy old the other day. I'll send you the picture. Mark Wright I bumped into. I live in the Wirral now. I'm in the Aldi the other day, and I said to me, "Bird, I'm sure that's Mark Wright." She went, "Who's that?" I said, "Well, no, the derby where he's editing." It went between me and Nev. I was going to flick it over the bar, mate.
Yeah.
So I said to Mark Wright, I said, "I haven't seen you since 30 years, last Friday or something it was." And he's like, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm Billy Kenny." I said, "You scored a good team. I fucking help you. How are you? Do you live over here, all that?"
I said,
"I was going to flick that over, you know." We were laughing, but
So when you watched the game back, did you think you played as well?
Yeah, I worked hard. I mean, people have gone on for years about me, right? Like, he got man of the match, this, that, and the other. And I've loved it. I've loved all the things. But when I look at the game, it was proper team performance, you know what I mean? It wasn't like there was boss players on there. Barry Horn had a boss game in there. Ian Snod had been injured for a while. He come back and had to mark John Barnes for fucking 17 minutes. He had a great game. Morris, Peter Beasley, Nev, Gary Ablett, brilliant. We all played well last night, you know what I mean?
Well, I'm like, Nev let one in though, didn't he?
Let me think of the goal.
The goal.
Oh, the goal, the corner. No, I was going to flick that over. Yeah, you should have thrown your cap on that.
So what, that was obviously, you know, people look back and they say that was, you know, your best performance. That was the pinnacle for you. Is that how it feels for you? What kind of started happening after that? Do you think all that fuss that was made about that game, do you think there was maybe too much focus on you?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm just saying. It was a boss team performance. There was too much focus on me. It may be because I was the youngest one there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But we played in the same season. See, this is what people don't realize. In the same season, we played them at Anfield, Liverpool. And we were right at them. We got beat 1-0. Ronnie Rosenthal scored. He was miles offside, lads.
Right near the end. Minutes from the end. Yeah, I was in a cup. Yeah.
VAR today wouldn't have even looked at it. The referee said it was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just offside. But yeah. I had a better game then. We all did. But obviously, the result went against us. But that was that. That sticks in my mind, the Anfield game with the...
Can I just say, Chelsea away, when you scored, had a blind alarm. Chelsea away, in the salmon kit, the blue salmon kit.
Yeah, I had a few good games, but you know what? That was it, mate. Every game for Everton, for me. I couldn't be arsed playing for anyone else, lad, when I left or when I got sacked and that.
So at that point, everyone's talking about you. There's all this focus on you. You're the team wonder, the local lads, the lifelong Evertonian. You've had this brilliant game in the Merseyside Derby. You've beaten Liverpool. You go on, you have a really good season. At that point, what's happening with you off the pitch at that point? Are you still focused and working hard? Or is your focus beginning to slip a little bit because maybe you're not getting the right advice at that time, maybe? I'm interested to know what was happening with you personally at that point, away from training and stuff.
Do you know what? To be honest with you, my life is changing. My life is changing since the first game I played for Everton. When you play for your local lads and you play for Everton or Liverpool, your life will change. But then... After that derby game, it went like tenfold, you know, it changed tenfold. I was getting noticed everywhere. I could angle all that. What happens was, my feet started going numb. I couldn't feel the ball with my feet and all that. So I was only lasting 20 minutes. My calves were going rock hard. My calves and my legs were going rock hard. And then there was no circulation. So my feet were going numb. So I've ended up having an operation. Me and Rob Jones from Liverpool got the same operation. And the surgeon said, we deal with these operations all the time. And the only people that come to see us is athletes, is runners, people who long distance runners. Well, my desire in the boxing gym, I used to do 10, 15 mile runs at least three times a week with the boxers and that.
So were you overtraining, basically?
Probably, yeah. And then I was going to Everton, I was going to Liverpool, I was going to Man United. I was faint out to death the time I was 20, I felt tired.
It wouldn't happen now, would it, Nev?
Well,
a club now, they've got sports scientists, they've got full medical teams, they've got all this, that type of thing wouldn't happen now, would it?
No, yeah. So what happened then was they were killing me, so... sees the specialist, me and Les, operations. So I can always remember going into the... When I went to see the surgeon, he got a felt-tip pen and he drawed lines at the top of me, like at the side of my leg, where they were going to cut on both legs. Just that big, about 6-10 inches. I was supposed to have scars like that. Well, when I woke up, I had fucking 30-inch, 40-inch scars down each shin. 50 stitches in each leg. I was in a wheelchair, I was on crutches. Well, When I got into Belfield, our Kendall's gone mad, right into Les. What's going on here? I was here. How come they've done that? Well, they had to go through the front of the shin to take the skin out of my calves. And it's absolutely, I had to learn to walk again and everything. But by that time, I'm starting to get depressed now. But I didn't know what depression was, you know what I mean? I'm just feeling unwell and that. But I couldn't, like, speak to my ma or dad, or there was no one at Everton to speak to, and all my mates are going out. And but as I said, when I was actually playing, I'd sorted all that with my mates. My mates left me alone. I was training. I was in bed. I was in the boxing gym. I was in bed at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, up at 7 in Belfield. Bump, bump, bump. So I could angle all that. I love the fame as well. I love being famous. I love, you know, I did. I love my hands up. I loved every minute of it. So I
think our secret drug addicts, you should probably come in here now, because I think, can you associate with what Billy's talking about, with that kind of suddenly his career's not going, he's got too much time on his hands, things aren't going right for him personally, and that's when a depression started, but he didn't know anything about it. Would you be able to kind of associate with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, for myself, when you're, especially if you're like associated with something, like, I suppose, you know, Billy's playing for Everton and he's a footballer, and suddenly he's not able to do that for a little bit, you know, your kind of sense of self is kind of completely attached to what you do. Do you know what I mean? I've had issues like that with myself, and then, you know, self-medicating, a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah. It was the first time in my life I've been injured. It was the first time I've ever been injured as well in my life. And I didn't know how to cope with it. The doctors told me I was going to be out for 6 to 8 months. And then after six months, I ended up getting a double hernia operation as well. So I was out for another 6 months. So there's a year. And by that time, I'd give in to everything. I got so depressed, I started going out. And the feelings and the thoughts, and I can't even remember having my first go with the cocaine. But what I can remember of it was, it just pushed all my worries to the back of my mind till the bender was over, you know what I mean? And then you wake up, obviously, they're in your face big time, then, aren't you? But for them few hours that all night that I wasn't thinking about, like, my injuries or ever playing for Everton again, because I thought I'm never going to play again. I mean, my legs were like that bad, and it was just, and then I was just in the wind then, if you like. The cocaine was taking all the mental pain away, if you like, you know. I was
hiding behind it. Did the club not offer you, like, any, I mean, obviously, if you're going into training every day from the age of 12 or 8, however long you've been at the club, every day you have this kind of routine, and then you're out for 8 months, and did the club offer you kind of any kind of care, any?
No, because
sat at home waiting to get better.
There was no care. There was, and Neville tell you, there was our Kendall asked me, right, and I told him a load of lies. I should have told him the truth. Look, I've been snorting cocaine, but I never, because I was scared. Everyone was scared, and I was not scared, but we had that so much respect for him, and he had me in the office. And I just said, I'm depressed. I've got all these stitches in my legs. I'm not travelling with the first team. But I really believe if I'd have told him the truth, he'd have helped me out. But as you know yourself, when you're hard in the grip of addiction, you don't want to shout it off the rooftops, do you? You know what I mean? You try and keep it under. You don't want to tell anyone what's going on.
Did you speak to anyone about it? There was no one there to speak to.
I was speaking to my
parents? Were you at home with your parents at the time?
I was locking myself in my room. No one come to see me. The local priest. I was that bad. Remember Henry?
Yeah.
Remember Henry, Nevy?
I remember Henry. Yeah.
I woke up after the 5 day bends, and Henry sitting on the end of my bed, lad. I thought I was in heaven. So I've gone in. I was gonna go on then, but I forget.
Henry was on your bed.
Yeah, I think, Billy, do you know when you're in the change rooms, at that time it wasn't, nobody had to have a problem, did they? Everybody just get on with shit.
Yeah.
And they just get on with it. So as soon as you were out of the team, you were injured, it was like you had a weakness.
Yeah,
so it was all about, you've got to be a man, you've got to play through it, you've got to get into the team and you've got to get yourself back. There was no aftercare or nothing like that, was there?
I was speaking to Michael Branchneb the other day. I listened to his podcast the other day, sorry, but he ended up playing for my Sunday league, the Brit lads. He was telling me you were helping him out and all that, Branchy. He ended up having a couple of games for me Saturday team around here. So anyway, he said, Billy, there's 17 people you can go and speak to in Finch Farm for mental health and whatnot. And I just hope that's because of me, you know what I mean? If that's because of me, it should have been.
Yeah.
And no other kids go down, because I literally had no one in the world to talk to who knew what was going on. I didn't even know what was going on with myself. I was 19, 18. I didn't have a clue. I had the feelings I was getting.
Can I just say this, though, as well? We spoke before this started, me and Billy. And we were really from a really close neighbourhood, and both of us recognised each other. I knew who he was already, but he knew my face. I'm saying to you, I was also, see, that night at that derby, this is what happened. I came out of the ground, went to Netley for 2 hours, then I dropped 2 gaddies and I went to Warrington to Mr. Smith's. I was a smackhead, but I was a working, I was functioning, I was working in insurance, I could work, I had dough, I just couldn't put this thing down, but I picked up at 17. Mm. But I want to go back to what you said about both you and Alan. You see, the context of this podcast is to try and bring a little light into a certain subject via an individual who's got experience thereupon, kind of thing. Now, especially in the early 90s, if you think back to Britpop, Alan, you was there, mate. You were on the ground with it. But I'm saying cocaine and alcohol were not viewed as a route to addiction. They were socializing.
What
I was doing, which was the fast train, the bullet train to Nowheresville. So I'm saying people, society and work and your own personality, if your behavior had manifested itself as it did at 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 in the year 2017, 18, 19, 21, 20, all through those, you yourself would have been more self-aware, because you would have recognized that there's a history of people with these substances doing crazy shit. But actually, what you were doing, the alcohol, oh my God, Roxy, Kirkdale, Walton, it's honestly, it's like our eyebrow. It comes with the package. It's come with all our fambos, all our, anyone we'll ever marry, anyone the kids will ever know in school, all of that from forever. So that part of it was kind of an accepted. The Charlie, I was here when Gia came. I was in the room the day the first parcel came. Gia came in, got a boot off its foot and went, bang, I'm here. That's what Gia done. The Charlie come in like a ballet dancer and tiptoed across Merseyside for about 3 years, maybe four, until Rock was the difference. That's what took it. No, but I'm trying to say, when people were looking at you and you, Billy, yourself, when you went into that room, which I also did, spent 6 and 9 months in my nan's ear on St. Domingo Road, I also used to, in complete in denial.
Oh.
I went to university on the gear. I walked in on the gear, and the day they put the gown and the cap on me, I was still on the gear. Denial was the house where I lived in.
Yeah.
But that substance, I think many of you who later found difficulty with that, adding both alcohol and cocaine together, because it was the party life. Everybody, every bird you wanted to know wanted to be out. All your mates wanted to be out. That's an easy trap to fall into.
Do you know what, lads? I don't like drinking. I don't like the taste of it. I never have. I haven't had a bevy now for about 10 years and that, lads. And my mum, dad, I couldn't wait all my life to not want to be out there, you know what I mean? It's just so easy to pack it in as well. I can't fancy, because I've been to 2 rehabs. Fucking, I ended up in South Africa as well about 15 years ago, lad. I was in Johannesburg. I was in a rehab over there. I'd done 5 months over there. And for the life of me, lad, I couldn't kick it on my own for all them years and that. And the minute me ma died, I was in the camp field. We had a bit of a park. You know, you go back and there's a bevy and all that.
It's over the road. It's over the road from here. That's where
The camp field's. Yeah. Well, I'm only from Mare Lane, aren't I?
Yeah.
So anyway, we're in the camp field, lads. And know what? I swear on me, it must have been me ma. We just buried there. I put the glass down, right? I didn't say to her. There was about 500 people in there. Me mates, everyone had come from everywhere to see me and support me. I put my glass down on the bar, lad, and sneaked out. I'd had about 10 fucking lines. Everyone wanted me in the bog and that. I fucked off, lad. I haven't picked it up since. On my own. I've been to all meetings, all rehabs, and they didn't work for me, lad. I'm not saying they don't work, they do.
Yeah,
I think I work the South Africa programme now in my head, you know what I mean? I'm on my cravings now. I stay away from dangerous people, places and things, you know what I mean? I've moved out to Liverpool. And life now, I'm sober. It sounds, you know, it's better anyway, you know what I mean? It's well better, lad. It's well better, mate. I didn't see no one for 10 years when I come off the drink. I started playing footy for the Brit again. I never missed a game, a friendly or not, and I loved it. 6 years I played and never missed one game and no drink, even when we won all the cups. I was just going home, no booze. So I can half trust myself now. Never say never, night, but I can half trust myself. I'm winning, lad, you know what I mean? I'm 50 in September. I'm just about winning now. But it's tough.
I think you've also got to realise, Mel, right, that the time that Billy was going through that, the clubs weren't as open and transparent as
what they are. I was going to ask about the clubs and the time, and it wasn't society generally didn't accept that men had mental health problems, did it? Society kind of, and a particularly sport, male sport, you didn't talk about mental health then, did you?
No one did. I didn't know what was going on with me. I'd never heard the word mental health. All I knew at that age was give us the ball a minute, give us that ball. That's all I knew. And how to be happy. I was dead happy as a kid. And then, boom, I'm like, I want to kill myself. And this is, it was just horrendous, mate. I mean, I look back now and think about them dark days. And I just thought there was no way out of this. I couldn't see no way out of it.
Do you think if you hadn't signed for Everton, it might have been different? Do you think if you'd gone to United or
possibly,
if you'd gone to a team where you'd moved out of the area and you didn't have that constant attention on the streets off people?
My dad wanted me to sign for Oldham and just to get me out of Liverpool. He thought Man United was a bit big for me and they had too many good players and he mustn't have had any confidence in me, must he? But I said, look,
not true.
Honest.
But Man United, millions, even then it was millions of pounds and internationals everywhere.
But I believed I'd have made it to any club, the confidence at that time.
My dad
did want me out the city, like, you know what I mean? But when it comes to it, I've never known that with my heroes, lads, you know what I mean? And yours, you know where I'm coming from, don't you? And Sharpie and Cheesy and I was playing with all, I'm lucky enough to play with all them. Because they're the only legends that we know, lad.
Yes.
They're the best Everton team we've ever had, and I played with these. So I'm dead lucky, me, lad. I got the arse end of all them. I was playing with Sheedy and all, and the reserve, Kevin Ratcliffe and the reserves. They helped me. Unbelievable. And then to play with Nevin all and the first team. And he used to drop me off every day at home, didn't you, lad?
Yeah.
Right into Anfield, he used to have him, lad, to be Mars. But he did, he used to wait for me all the time. And I said I wasn't going to do any more podcasts. I said to Neville, do anything for Neville, like, you know what I mean? Because he used to pick Doolan up, didn't you, lad, on Islington? And then he used to get me, by Ogden's, lad.
Yes.
He'd pick me up by Ogden's and bring me to Belfast every morning and every night, Nev. So
The other thing you got to realise, Mel, right, is that we actually didn't know what was going on with Billy anyway, because it was kept away from us as much as possible.
Yeah.
It was like a closed shop. So I only heard bits of rumours of what was going on, right? So look, and I think the club's image was so tight and wanted to control everything. I think they tried to push Billy under the carpet in lots of ways, and they didn't want it to get out, and he certainly didn't want the other players knowing about it. And I also think, Billy, your dad probably wanted you to go to Oldham, because the bigger the club, the more temptations. So he's looking at Oldham as a different way of going.
Yeah. Yeah, he's probably that. Everything my dad said to me, lads, now I think back, it was right what he said and all that. You know, when you're younger, you're just like, it's going in one ear and out the other, and you think you know everything and this, that, and you know shit all because you're a kid. Yeah. You're 19 and you think you know it all. But everything my mum and dad said to me about like family, about mates not being there when the shit hits the fan, everything they've said's happened, lads, you know what I mean? So yeah. If he has any advice to any kids out there, just listen to your parents, because I mean, they're the only people really who love you, aren't they, lads? You come across a million people. I had a million mates.
But also,
count them on one hand.
Recovery. If you haven't gone through that experience where some people, often with addicts, and there's three of us sitting here now tonight in this conversation, those relationships can break down. In fact, predominantly do break down. Yeah. Maybe 90% of them break down. So when you actually, three of us are really fortunate in that we've got years behind us now, and the substances we disabused and abused, are behind us, and we've become different people now. So we've got different thought processes and different emotional responses to things we didn't have in our toolbox when we were on the front line.
Exactly.
Well, the three of us, I think we can all agree, we've all lost at least one parent. I know that for a fact. So I would say that's the thing. When you actually admit, it's about admission. You just said then, if I'm talking to kids, if we're all talking to kids, and that's what we're here for, ostensibly to carry a message, is that that's the one thing. If you've never had a breakdown with a relationship as close to that with your parents, with your children, even with your spouse, or even your grandparents, depending on what your personal circumstances were, when you get that realization, and you know you want to be better, it's actually those words what first come into your head, that your ma or your dad or whoever it was down your particular ear when you weren't, you tuned out, you was already on this thing here and weren't listening. But actually when you find it, that's the bit, or at least it was with me anyways, that me mum, me nan, me dad, everybody, me dad, my whole family, the things, don't do this, you've got a head full of
blame,
do this, don't be like your mate, and every bit of it, it was like gospel. I should have put it on the wall.
So
that's the bit, you're right what you said, listen to your parents, but
definitely
you'd have to fight against yourself to not listen to your parents, because actually, in another 15 years, you'll really be wanting to listen to your parents.
I'm telling my own kids now. I'm screaming at them, listen, I've made enough mistakes for a lot of us.
Yeah.
They're doing everything. Oh, they're killing me. I might as well not even. Oh, I can't stand it. One of them reminds me of myself, and I can't even look at him. He won't listen to me. They're doing the opposite, just like I done. I must have had my poor Mars and Tars head up the wall, lads. And it kills me, that.
Yeah.
That's what kills
me. Patience. Alan's more the Zen being in this, but rather than me. But I think that's the patience aspect. That's the bit in your recovery, that's that patience mountain you've got to. Because we all want everything now, and look at me, I've improved, and so I deserve everything, and I need it now. Mm. Well, the patience mountain is now in your way, so that's another journey, your dad's journey, as it were. But as I say, Alan's the Zen person, but I think that's where we might be.
So Alan, when this was happening, though, just quickly, and then we'll bring Alan in, because I'm just really interested in what you said a minute ago about you didn't know. So where did you think Billy was? Did you just think he was injured? Did you know he was in the Priory? I mean, was this literally, was it that secretive? Was it just, didn't get spoken about that he had these mental health problems?
Well, mental health problems, no. That was never mentioned.
Right.
cocaine was mentioned now and again, but do you know me? It wasn't. You were never gonna. I was never gonna go and ask Colin or Howard about Billy, was I? And I thought, well,
with no one picking up the phone to Billy to ask him how he was.
No, because we didn't actually know what was going on. You know, if yeah. And let's be honest, I knew nothing about drugs in them days. I still don't know, really. If I was going to pick up the phone to Billy and go, Billy, I believe you're on drugs, mate, are you? What the fuck are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Probably gone, fuck off. Who do you think you are?
I wouldn't have been in.
Hey?
I wouldn't have been in the house. I'd have been in the house.
I know, but I think sometimes, you know what I said to you the other day on the phone? People only change when they want to change. You can't force people to do stuff. It don't happen to me. If you want to change, you'll change. If you don't, then you go down the same road. It was really cloak and dagger with Billy because they wanted to keep it under wraps because obviously they didn't want the press getting hold of it for Billy's sake and Billy's family's sake. They didn't want it for the club's sake. And they didn't want it because it would attract so much attention as well. And let's be honest, I don't really want to remember Billy as anything else but a footballer.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Dave. Can you remember yourself like that now, Billy? Can you remember yourself as a footballer? Or do you look back on that period of time with regrets? Or is pride?
Do you know what? It's a great question because it's only nowadays, right, I can live with myself. I've just... And it hasn't been that long. I've struggled for 30. Honest to God, it's been about... See, my mum died 10 years ago. It's been over the last 3 years. I've only... I started playing football, didn't I? So it's only been around the last 5 or 6 years that I've been able to live with myself, to be honest with you, because I still struggle with my mental health. I'm on the AA medication and that, but... just to give me a little leg up on that with my brains or whatever. I don't know where they've gone. Just the snores of them. But anyway,
can you associate with that, Alan? Can you sort of see what he's where Billy is with that? We're kind of coming to terms with what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be really difficult because I suppose you've done this kind of amazing thing, and then it's ended. And it's obviously ended prematurely and, you know, badly. And having to kind of accept that. I mean, it took me, I had similar stuff with some of the bands that I worked with. And I just wouldn't talk about, you know, working in the music industry for years. And after about 4 or 5 years, we'd be out and something would come on the radio and I'd go, oh, I worked on this record. They'd go, oh, no way, really? I go, yeah. And occasionally, you know, start sort of talking to him, you sort of tell him more. It probably took me about 4 or 5 years, you said about the same time, to kind of accept that I'd had this kind of career and I'd done this stuff and that it had come to an end and that everything that has a beginning has an end, and just to kind of enjoy that moment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I walked around for 30 years there, 25 years, absolutely hating myself. Hated myself, honestly. It's only been the last 5 years I've been able to live with myself and be happy. I'm only just starting to be happy now. That's what I said before, I'm nearly 50. It was 30 years ago, but it's done my head in that much. Obviously, the drinking the drugs didn't help, but it's done my head in that much. And I've seen loads of psychiatrists down the years with the rehabs I've been in and stuff like this, and they've said, look, you'll never get over something like that, they're saying, you know what I mean? And like, that was a bit of a thing, you know, a bit of a setback in my mind for me. I've been told that a few times, but I disagree, mate, because then I don't, because it's still in the back of my mind now, because I'm talking about it, but...
Well, I suppose it's like, what's to get over, though? When they say get over, yeah. I mean, I'd use...
You said they had post-fucking...
Yeah, post-traumatic stress, but you did things, lad. Listen to me, I live on Albion Street. You just said you're from Mere Lane. I live on Albion Street next to St. George's Church. I can nearly throw a cricket ball into your Mars garden from here.
Yeah, that's right, lad.
Is the point I'm trying to make to you. You grew up in a city round here where I live. Intense doesn't even go near it as the guy, especially then. Intense doesn't even touch it. And what you did, what Alan's trying to say to you there, it's that's a classic glass half full, glass half empty. Yes, post-traumatic stress, certainly, because it was to the potential aspect of it, that you got there, not wasn't dreams anymore, it's real, it's on Sky telly, and not just Evertonians, the whole world sees it because it's global. So that, I will give you the post-traumatic stress. But as far as living with yourself, we don't know each other. We kind of know loads of people mutually, but I'm going to give you the piece of advice if you don't mind. You've got to look at that and say, if my kids or friends' kids or people from the neighborhood, because you are known in this vicinity here, around here, individually, aside from your dad, that's levels of motivation. That's something to be proud of. That's not, there is a definite post-traumatic stress there. I will give you that element to it. But there's also this other big slice where to concentrate on one and not the other is not fair, to be frank. You know, and also, it's not productive.
Do you know what? And I know what I said. I can just like, it hasn't been long since I could live with myself. Do you know, since all this social media has come about and has done the James English thing and I got the feedback off everyone, I've sat there and I've thought, you know what, Billy, because honest to God, I've thought, what's all the fuss about me for? I mean, all right, I was an all right footy player, but I think people are going over the top here. I've always thought that myself anyway. But over the last couple of years, especially this year and that, and I've got a lovely girlfriend, by the way, as well. She helps me out a lot, mate. She really does. I mean, she's my little rock. But anyway, so what was I going to say? Yeah, so over the last couple of years now, all said and done, and after the feedback I've had over the last couple of years with the social media, I've thought to myself, do you know what, Bill? You know, you've done well there. You had a good go there. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. I did. I played for Everton more than once. Play for Oldham, I've got an England cap, and I've thought, but all for the last 25 years, I never ever thought looked at it like that. I didn't give it a second chance. I was always drunk or pissed, but I was sick of hearing people down my ears out there, and my ears near fell off the knees, and they're melting how good you are. I was sick of it, lad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And inside, I felt rotten.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like a professional, no down the years. But now I'm sober, lad, and over the last couple of years, I've had good feedback and people are like, I can live with that now, you know what I mean? Because, and partly is it because I'm sober as well, because it does help us all. We can, you know, it does, doesn't it?
Rationalise. You can rationalise. What Alan was saying to you before about how that it's not necessarily the case. That's the other thing, what living in this, these contemporary times we live in, everything now is hyper-analyzed. Every situation, because of social media, or definitely social media is a factor. So you analyze everything. A car crash, to go back 10 stops before the car even put the brake on and dissect everything. Well, addiction it's like baseball and cricket to statisticians. It's literally made for this let's see both sides of this particular argument. And in your case, more than either me or Alan, or he has got an element of it, but definitely in your case, there is a certain traumatic aspect to it, because it was grasped away and it was kind of out of your hands. You didn't do anything on purpose, it just literally went. And the addiction followed that. It didn't predate it, kind of thing. But to say, to ignore the other aspect, is when you've grown up here, and if this had happened to somebody else in your street or the next two streets down from you, and it wasn't you, and you still lived around here and spent your time around here, you'd still want your kids to grow up and be that person, despite what happened in the end, to have that drive, that motivation, what you spoke about before. And yet you did have it in your family, but they don't get you through playing for Campion and playing down there every night, because I live down there, and I'll tell you, that's going to happen if you have it. That doesn't carry any weight once you get outside, kind of thing. You get respect for it, but then you'd have to earn it yourself. Yeah. So to come through that, if I was giving you some advice, just listening on what you've said tonight, you've already got them tools in your bag because you'd exhibited them earlier on.
Yeah, as well. And like for years and that, I'm going off here a bit, but I'm just going to tell you how I was feeling while I was out partying in Liverpool and being me, you know what I mean, in the city centre and that. So I'd always be off my cake on the Charlie, lad. It wasn't a time in them 25, 30 years that like I didn't have a bag of lemon on me, lads, everywhere I went, to be honest. I was always out. So when I'd be off me cake, I'd get people staring at me. Like if I go over to Liverpool now of a day, 30 people are let onto me. Easy. 30, 50 people over in Liverpool. All right, Bill, some know me, some don't. All right, and all this, that, and the other. So years ago, lad, when I was on the Charlie, I didn't know what they were looking. I thought they were snarling, like, there's Billy, or there's that knobhead, you turn everything away. Or so I was fighting all the time, and I ended up in jail, and it was all the paranoia, and I thought people were taking the piss out of me or talking. But everywhere, if I walk into the booze, and now the old pub will go like that, lads, or most of them, there's a... And I see it all, you know what I mean? All right, Bill, and I'm all right, and you know, I've got to be all put my mask on, and I'm sick of the mask, lads. So we took the mask off and left it in Liverpool, and I'm over on the wheel now, and I feel great.
You know, Billy, right? I've got tons of respect for you, mate, right? Because you've come through all that shit, and now you're trying to give back.
Yeah.
You're trying to get back into the schools to give talks. I know you're looking for people out there to help you to get into schools to give there. And I think it takes an incredibly determined, brave, nice fella to try and give something back when you've been through so much. It'd be easy for you to hide at the moment, but I know after speaking to you on the phone the other day how passionate you are about trying to get forward. I mean, the only thing I would say about going into schools, they're going to have to actually put subtitles on for you.
Hello?
Coming from you. That is a classic. Someone clip that. Because coming from you to tell him that is an absolute worldie. Well played, goalie.
Well played. I've just done an interview. Well, I've done it about a month ago for the Echo. It's out in the face. I got the pictures done in Liverpool. I was over in Burlington Street on Saturday getting my photos done for the play. But it's going in the Echo. In March, I think it's the first week in March. The write-up I'd done 2 months ago for the play, but I was banging on about, I'm waiting to get into these schools and have to see these kids because I've got a great programme in mind for these school kids because it's just not like, you know, you think it's just like your bad mates and all that, like you get told, no, we were telling about our mates, telling you, stay away from him, stay. But sometimes it's not your mates. I mean, I found it even some of my family, you know what I mean, lads, who wasn't on my side and brought me down wrong roads and that. But family who I looked up to, you know what I mean, who've got kids themselves now playing football and unbelievable. But I've got a great little programme in my mind to sit with these kids because I know every turn, lad. You know yourself, don't you? We're from the streets. We know everything. I know all the dangerous things now to stay away from, the people, the places, the things. And
the other thing is the kids now, what we've spoken a couple of times tonight, are 12-year-olds, like an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
Now, they'll buy and sell you.
All day. They're
onto everything. So the thing what you bring, with respect, is legitimacy.
Yeah.
Whether that doesn't even have to be in Liverpool. You bring legitimacy because you not only talked about it, you walked it and then fell off it, and now you're here talking about it.
Yeah.
Alan, you've obviously got the whole support system that you've set up yourself via Twitter where you're helping people. Does that help you bring meaning to those lost years, those years you lost to addiction? Will this help Billy bring some meaning to the years that he lost if he does this helping people?
I think so. I mean, it makes, for me anyway, it feels like, well, you know, I couldn't do the things that I do and help people the way that I do if I hadn't gone through what I've gone through.
Exactly.
You know, so it does make you feel kind of like, you know, I'm a better parent for you know, having gone through the stuff I've gone through, I'm a better friend.
Hey, do you know what? Matt, you should say that. I am a better parent. I really am. I mean, my kids all live with me now. Through the drinking and all that, and like, obviously they were with the mothers and that, because I was no fit thingy, you know what I mean, at times, like, my little kids and all that, but they've all grown up now. They've never seen me drunk, my kids, because they were only 10 and that, you know what I mean? Well, when I play for them...
Mine haven't. I'm 16 years sober this year.
Yeah. Brilliant. But you see, my kids have never seen me drunk and that, you know what I mean? I've sat them down, because my oldest 23 now, my lad's 19 and one's 18. I've sat them down, I've told them the story, what I'm telling you and all, and they're proud of me, my kids, they love me. And I'm speaking to Nev the other day, Nev said, and I feel a bit emotional now, but Nev said the other day, he said, Billy, he said, you know, if you can save some of these kids, mate, I feel like, he said, it's better than playing for Everton, lads. You know what I mean? What you're doing now with your podcast and like your mental health things, and you want to get into these schools and speak to the kids and that. He said it's better than playing for Everton, and it would be. I mean, playing for Everton, it's for me, was me thing, and it'd be rad up there if I could get into these schools. So in the Echo, me fucking interview with the Echo, I'm screaming at the fella doing the interview. I said, I've been to the council and everything. Someone wrote a letter to Liverpool Council seeing if I can get into it. I'll do it for nothing. As if it was asking for a wage, lad. I want to get in there and speak to the kids, you know what I mean?
You know, I mean, there's organisations. I used to go into schools. You know, and I mean, like the Amy Winehouse Foundation, I know they have a department that goes into schools and talks and stuff. So, you know, there's people I could maybe connect you with that would. They used to have something going on in Liverpool, so I'm sure if they still do, they probably do. But yeah, I mean, it's great because you get people like us that go in, and like Dave said, there's that sort of, there's that legitimacy.
Well, that's what appeals. Yeah, what appeals to me, going and see that. I mean, again, I've been asked to go on the Everton circuit around the boozers and all that. They must think I'm John Bailey left. I said, I don't drink no more. I said, I don't want nothing to do with boozers. You can shove your little exes up your ass. My thing is to go into these kids for nothing, sober, and sit down and like and chat to them and Because that's my line. That's where I wanna go.
What about young footballers then, Nev? You were saying obviously, you know, it was never spoken about, this type of thing or whatever. Does every football club need a Billy Kenny? Does everybody need somebody who's got the legitimacy, who's had the experiences, maybe to help the young players there, just to share a bit of experience with that legitimacy behind it, rather than someone just saying, now, don't do this and don't do that, actually give more context to it?
Yeah, I think it's a sensible thing. I mean, it'd be good if Billy could actually mentor some of the kids, do you know what I mean? But the thing is, it's all about signposting. For Billy now, he's frustrated because he can't find a route into where he wants to go. That will come eventually, you know, maybe through the council or maybe through the charity that hopefully I'll give him a message with tomorrow. But I think the clubs are well versed in what they do. The clubs are still not as transparent as you think they are, not as welcome as you think they are. What the FA should be doing and the PFA should be doing was getting Billy and doing Billy's life story like he's done, you know, and then maybe even showing the plate to the teams. Because I think what he's gone through, you were never going to set out to write. Do you know what I mean? So you're not. So it was a case of, look, this is how it happened. This is how football was in them days. This is how it's changed. Maybe if they sat down with people like Billy, they'd actually understand that you need different kind of support at times. Not one type of support is no good for everybody. You have to have a range of support. And yeah, it would be nice for Billy, I know we talked about the other day, to do something with Everton, but I still think that's a little bit raw. You know, what he wants to do really, if I'm not talking out of turn, Billy, is to get where the real need is. The real need's not in football clubs. The real need is in the streets. And I think he needs to be in the streets, in the schools. And like I said to him before, and I'll say it to you again, Billy, if you save one life, which you will, over time, that's got to be worth a million Everton appearances.
Definitely. Well, do you know, to be fair to the PFA, now, Brendan Batson, when I was getting sacked off Everton, Brendan Batson and that, and Mick, Brendan Batson and Mick, Mick McGuire, from the PFA, they were looking after me, and they were trying to get me into all the clubs, but I was still using and drinking at the time. They were asking me, so it was pointless. I had to knock it back. I was still drinking and using, and to do that and going to speed, it's just cheating, really, isn't it? So, but I'm ready now. I'm ready for anything that's going to come now. I'm ready, and I'll put as much effort into trying to save and speak to these kids than I did trying to play forever, because that's the way.
I would love to see your script. I would love to see your script on the play, because it must be.
Well, we need to talk about the play, actually. So the play is going to be on. It's the Royal Court, and it's in April, and I'm just having a quick look here now. And there's going to be 6 nights, is that right?
Well, they've put another 2 nights on the show.
I know.
Beyonce only does 7. So Beyonce only does 7. So you need to do 8. That's okay.
So I just, if people are interested, so this, you've approved this, and you've helped them work on the script for this. Is somebody playing you, telling your story? Yeah. Is that how this is going to work?
Yeah, Jay Johnson. He was in Baby Blue and Boiling Point. Remember,
Little Boy Blue.
He was in that. He's Stephen Graham. He works with Stephen Graham. Jay Johnson, great little lad. He's already played the playoff for me and my girlfriend a couple of weeks ago. Just a little thing. It's hilarious.
And what do you think? How does it feel seeing that? Is it cathartic?
Well, do you know what? It was dead emotional for me. Me and Miguel were crying. We were laughing. The writer was crying. We were all crying. We were all laughing. It's got a bit of everything. And it's fun. And yeah, it's about the mental health side of things and that. Because Jay, the actor, he's big on mental health. He's got this lads thing. That you can all have a look at. It's called Lads, Lads, Lads. Just type it in, and it's Jay. Yeah, he's a Scouse kid. He's aspiring actor, and he's doing that as well. And he played it out. There was no backdrop. It was just him in town the other week. Just like, because he got the script off the right, and he read it out to me. And if he wanted anything taken out or put in, I just said that sound. But we were laughing our heads off. So it's going to be
So there's 3 nights. So if people who are watching this or listening to this podcast, if you go onto the Royal Court's website, there's still tickets available for some nights. 3 nights are sold out, but you can still go and watch it on the 18th, 19th, and the 20th of April.
No, there's the 4 nights. The 4 nights sold out.
The 4 nights sold out.
Yeah, there's only Tuesday and Wednesday. There's about 100 tickets left for 2 nights.
So people need to get these tickets fast, don't they? Before they all go.
You don't know.
Can
this,
we get on the guest list?
I haven't even got no tickets myself. I'm not going. I can't go. Imagine that.
You have to pay for your own ticket. So can learn a bit more about your story this play, and then hopefully learn more from your experiences. And you know, Neville's keen to work you. Alan's hopefully going to put you in touch with some people. Yeah. And so, do you see that now as your legacy? You know, you really want to go and help save other people.
It's a burning desire I've got for it. I love the kids. They're the future, aren't they? And what's going on now on the streets of Liverpool, mate? It's just absolutely. I can't remember the last time I seen a kid kicking a ball against the wall. You know, it breaks me. It breaks me out, lads. Seriously. And the poor drug addicts are all those totters all over the place. I feel sorry for all. It's just a terrible state of affairs, mate. So anyway, I can help. I'll go into these schools, mate. I'll play footy with these kids all morning. I'll talk to them all afternoon, every day of the week for fuck all, mate. And that'll make me happy, because Nev said to me the other day, he said, what are you doing for money? And I said, you know what, lads? I said, I'm all right. I said, you know what? No, the way I feel now, I don't need no money, lad.
Yeah.
I'm just so high on. I've been that depressed all my life. And I'm not just saying this, right? The last 2 years, I'm just winning. I'm happy now. There she is. I'm talking about you here. Girl, she knows I'm talking about her.
I want to say thank you to you, Billy, for joining us on the podcast 90 Minutes with Neville Southall. I want to say thank you to Secret Drug Addict for joining us tonight, to Dave,
boys.
And obviously to Big Nev himself. Thanks for being so honest.
Thank you.
And I really hope that, that you get to make a difference. But thanks very much for joining us on 90 Minutes with Neville Southall. Thank you.
Thanks, Nev. Thanks, boys.
It's Billy. Thanks, mate.
See you in a bit.
Stay there.